Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure. As always, we got some... I'm Jim Blasingame, by the way, in case you didn't know that. And we got some good stuff lined up for you this segment and the next. Dr. Gilbert Metcalf is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Metcalf is professor of economics at Tufts University, a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. He received his... His PhD from Harvard University. He's a smart guy, and he's written some. He does a lot of work on energy, and what promotes energy development. And he's written a piece called "Taxing Energy in the United States: Which Fuels Does the Tax Code Favor?" So I've got as you can imagine, I've got a lot of questions for him. Let's get him in here. He says we can call him Gilbert. Gilbert, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim.
We're on a first name basis around here. It's good to have you here. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the work that you do. The title of your white paper, Taxing Energy in the United States, Which Fuels Does the Tax Code Favor? Is this a case of the government, another case of the government picking winners and losers?
Well, the government has always tried to favor various fuels, try to support them so that we get a diverse energy mix in the United States. You might call it favoring particular fuels, but probably they're pretty eclectic in the fuels that they support. I think that one of the great misconceptions is that the only thing that the federal government supports is the big old fossil fuels, coal and oil and natural gas. And it's true that they get a fair amount of support, but it's also true that renewable energy, wind, solar, ethanol, they get a lot of support too. So the study was really trying to understand that.
And you know, it's not just recently that the government has supported R&D in other energies as well either, because I remember I was in the investment business back in the 80s, and there were significant research and development tax credits for anything that you wanted to look into. It wasn't just for oil exploration.
Well, that's right. And R&D, research and development tax credits, have been a long-standing policy. I actually don't look at those in this study because those are available to any R&D activity,
right,
not just energy. I really just wanted to focus on those parts of the tax code that are specific to the energy industry.
Right. Now, one of the things that you point out in your paper is the way the balance of attention has shifted, though, from fossil fuels to some of the alternative fuels. Talk to us about that.
Well, that's right. So if you go back to 1997, over roughly two-thirds of the support through the tax code was given to fossil fuels. That share has dropped to under 50%. We've seen a big increase in the support for renewable electricity and energy, as well as conservation and energy efficiency. Now, that's good news, I think, in terms of supporting a diverse energy mix. The picture is a little bit shaded, however, in that much of the support in renewables is for corn-based ethanol, which most analysts think is not a very good solution to our energy problems.
I'm not an analyst, but I agree with them.
Well, we'd like to see the support shift to sort of what we call second generation ethanol.
Didn't that kind of support contribute to the run up in the price of corn and other commodities recently?
I think it contributed to it. We saw a big global run up in food prices, and certainly the U.S. demand for ethanol contributed to it.
Because corn has become a major staple in so much of our lives these days, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Not only do we eat it directly in the breakfast cereals and other food products, but it's a feed for cattle. We had the tortilla riots in Mexico City when tortilla prices went up. It is basic to the fabric.
Well, and not only, yeah, exactly. In addition to corn oils and I mean, it's just used so many different ways. So when you subsidize something like that, when you create an environment where that product is overvalued, then you create an inflationary situation and a price problem for a lot of the world's population. Really, that's what happened, wasn't it? I mean, there were some crises, some food crises in other parts of the world, weren't there?
Absolutely, there were, and I think we've recognized this, but we now have a policy in place where we are mandating that a certain amount of our gasoline come from biofuels. And right now, right. The only way to do that is corn-based ethanol. It's a big problem.
And corn ethanol is not a good. I mean, there's no real economy, is there, in terms of trying to lower our carbon footprint and maybe find a more economical way to propel ourselves and our machines. Corn is not an efficient way to do that, is it?
That's correct. There's a great debate going on as to whether you create more carbon emissions or less carbon emissions with corn-based ethanol relative to gasoline. I think the best you can say is it's pretty much a wash, but it doesn't do much for our climate change.
What do the people who are passing these laws do we now understand that corn? Maybe I should say, is the bloom off the rose on corn as a future fuels opportunity? Are these policies going to be changing?
Well, I hope so, but I think it's important to recognize that corn-based ethanol is less of an energy policy than an agricultural policy.
Yeah.
And I think once we get that recognition, it may be easier to sort of marshal the right response to overturn this policy. But it's going to be hard.
Well, and you know, there are biofuels, switchgrass and fuels from trash and things like that. Lots of different kinds of biofuels, but I prefer to use the term alternative fuels because that encompasses the whole array of options, doesn't it?
Well, there are certainly other things out there other than biomass. You've got wind, which has seen tremendous growth
right.
in the United States, and solar power. So yes, I think that's a good way to think about it.
And aren't the tax codes moving more towards those two? Aren't they becoming more subsidized than they were?
That's right. They definitely are, and we're seeing the results in wind and solar investment in the United States too.
Hold on to that thought. Dr. Gilbert Metcalf is our friend, is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, our new friend. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Metcalf to do some picking of some winners and some losers, and what he thinks President Obama is going to do. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website, smallbusinessadvocate.com. And from there, you can find my blog, jimsblog.biz. From there, you can find my knowledge base, askjim.biz, where you get small business answers now. And you can check out all the other things that we do there, the archives, the articles, the Brain Trust members. You can subscribe to my free newsletter. Lots of stuff you can do there. Hope you'll use it to your advantage. And by the way, the newsletter comes every Sunday afternoon. Get you ready for the week ahead by email, and everything's free. Dr. Gilbert Metcalf is our guest and our new friend, and he's professor of economics at Tufts University in the Boston area. And we're talking about the energy tax scenario in the United States, the tax planning that's being done to help in the development, the discovery, the development, the improvement of all kinds of energy, carbon energy, wind energy, nuclear, solar, et cetera, right, Gilbert?
Yes, sir.
And now I want to come back to my question when we went to the break. I said I was going to give you an opportunity to pick the winners and the losers. And you and I have already – I think you and I are pretty much on the same page on the corn thing. What do you think about some of the other alternative fuels? Is hydrogen have a chance? And is it being promoted as much as it should be?
Well, I think hydrogen has potential, but we have lots to do in terms of understanding the technology, and we need a whole infrastructure for hydrogen fueling in the United States, which we don't have at present.
Right.
I think a more promising technology is electric vehicles that we plug into the electric grid. I think there's a bigger issue for your listeners to think about, Jim, and that's that we should not be in the business of picking winners and losers. We should be creating an environment so that the best technology can win and use the power of the marketplace.
Exactly. Thank you, sir.
And the way to do that is to have some sort of carbon price, whether it's a national carbon tax or a cap and trade system, that raises the price of fossil fuels, and then let the best carbon free technology, whether it's hydrogen, wind, solar,
You're picking a winner by doing that right there. I'm against carbon tax. I'm not in favor of the cap and trade at all, because I fear that what it's going to do is it's going to make the United States less competitive against countries that will not even begin to. I mean, do you agree with me that China currently has one fifth of our economy? Their economy is one fifth the size of ours. But I've been told in the research that I've looked into that their carbon footprint may equal ours with a fifth of the economy, and yet they're in no way do they have any plans to curb their carbon emissions. When you tax our carbon in the United States, Gilbert, all you're doing is making us uncompetitive.
Well, it's true that China's carbon emissions are growing, and they have either just become the world's leader in carbon emissions or soon will be, and I think it's absolutely essential that China has to put a carbon price in place at some point, sooner than later. The reality is that we can't solve the climate problem without China and without India.
Right.
The other reality is that they simply are not going to accept any kind of carbon policy until the United States acts. So my view is not that we should just act and then say, well, let's just hope that China comes on board at some point, but rather we act, put a policy in place, and then say, okay, China, you have 8 years to put together a policy. Otherwise, we're going to put some sort of tax on imports into this country. Either you tax your carbon emissions, or we're going to tax them when your goods are brought into this country.
Hasn't the marketplace done a pretty good job over the last almost 20 years in reducing the dependence upon carbon per dollar of GDP? I mean, that's something the marketplace has done on its own through efficiencies, through natural seeking of efficiencies. I think businesses don't get enough credit, Gilbert, for the work that they've done in reducing our dependence upon oil per dollar of GDP. And isn't that the best way to measure it?
Well, you know, oil is a part of the problem for climate change, but the bigger problem is coal. And the United States sits on the biggest reserves of coal in the world. So I'm a big fan of the market, and in fact, my approach is to use the power of the market by providing the right incentives. And the incentive here is simply to recognize that there is a cost to our environment of using carbon-based fuels, and that simply ought to be reflected in the price. And I'm not saying we should stop our economy or we should go back to 1990 levels. We have tremendous technological opportunities and tremendous ability to innovate. We see tremendous innovation in response to higher prices, just like we saw in response to the higher oil prices in the 1970s and 80s.
Right. You mentioned coal, but you didn't finish your thought, I think. Are you saying that you're not a fan of coal?
I'm a fan of using coal in a way that doesn't lead to a growth in carbon emissions. Sure,
yeah.
And we can do that with carbon capture and storage.
Right. Well, you and I will have to. You'll have to come back. We'll have to continue this debate. And I've enjoyed our conversation very much, Gilbert. And we'll have to get you back another day, and we'll have to continue this conversation. I think we're going to have plenty of things to talk about, because I think the new president is going to be addressing this cap and trade issue, isn't he?
We think he is.
Yeah, but I predicted, though, Gilbert, not this year. Not in 2009 he won't do that.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Because of the economy. Dr. Gilbert Metcalf, thank you for being here, Dr. Metcalf, and we'll have you back again real soon. Quick break,
pleasure.
29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.